Hey, Ryan. Ryan, I forgot my watch. Can I borrow yours? Sorry.
It's okay.
Totally unprepared. Gosh. Well, we'll start uncomfortably. And I guess, you know, you get a priest or a deacon or somebody who wears black to do a talk about uncomfortable holiness because, you know, I have awkward, uncomfortable moments on a regular basis every day. And there's a particular one that comes up all the time. And, well, not all the time, but it's just enough that every time it comes up, I chuckle a little bit. So about 2 weeks ago, I was helping one of the priests at the seminary by taking his preaching at all of his Sunday masses. So we went to a parish out east, like past St. Thomas More. We were covering for somebody, so we were way out there. And so I preached the early morning mass at 8 o'clock. And of course, afterwards, we're, you know, shaking hands with everybody, saying hi, and everybody said, "Oh, you know, it's so nice to be here. You're so young." All of this, and then I get the one lady who comes up and says, "Oh, you know, I just have 4 daughters, and I wish you could have just married one of them." I don't know what to say. Thank you. Like, this is the life that God has called for me. She's like, "I know, but, you know, the guys they bring home to date are just no good." I was like, "I don't know what to tell you, lady. Like, what do you want me to say?" It's like, "Do you have any pictures?" "No, that's not..." But this, you know, this happens a lot. And as I was thinking of this moment, as Father Tom Ray was preaching earlier at Mass, and he talked about, you know, what we have given up, that it costs so much to follow Jesus Christ, that when we follow him, inevitably you're going to have to leave something behind. And I was thinking about my own life. I was thinking about what I have left behind, and people always tell you, you know, "Oh, you know, you didn't get married," or "You can't have a job." And I was thinking about it, and I was like, I don't really think I've given up anything. You know, the Lord has that story about the pearl of great price that's buried in the field, and you would sell absolutely everything you have to buy that field just for the one pearl. And that's my life. That the Lord had, the more I think that I've given up, the more I think that I have really challenged myself, the more I realize that this is all just the greatest thing that could have possibly happened to my life, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. That it's such a blessing to have this love of the Lord and to be called and to know that this is what the Lord wants you to do for the rest of your life. It's like, I don't really feel like I've given up anything. That this, that the Lord constantly gives and gives and gives. And sure, there are hard days. Sure, it's not the easiest thing in the world. But nothing good is. I mean, being a parent is not easy, but it's absolutely a gift or a blessing. Being a husband or a wife is difficult, and it's trying, and it tests your patience every day. Maybe. I won't inquire further, Megan. Sorry, Brad. But it, you know, but when you know the Lord's there, and when you know that his love is going to sustain you, it's worth it. All the uncomfortable moments, all the trying moments, all the times that test your patience is absolutely worth it, and you wouldn't have it any other way. And that's the pearl of great price that we'd be willing to sell everything to have, that we would rely on the love, the truth of Jesus Christ. And that's who we are as Christians. We're ones who are absolutely focused on the love of the Lord. And so what does it mean for us to do this day in and day out? That we have this opportunity, that it's the most ridiculous thing ever, that it's just so awesome, that it's life is with the Lord is such an adventure for our lives. But it does make us uncomfortable at times. And part of that, I think, those uncomfortable moments that come up, or the awkward moments, whatever you want to call them, the times when, you know, the ladies in their 50s tell you that they have daughters that are your age, you know, those odd moments are all part of kind of the joy and the fun of it. But if we are going to follow Jesus, we're going to have to be uncomfortable at times. That it's never going to be just like straightforward, like, "Oh, this is great." But it's really going to be difficult at times, and it's really going to challenge us. And you think about looking at Jesus in the Gospels and how he interacted with different people, and he constantly made people uncomfortable. Everywhere he went, there was people taken aback saying, what in the world is this guy saying? Like, is part of Jesus' ministry that he's interacting with people is just one huge awkward moment? I mean, think about it. The Pharisees, from the moment Jesus shows up, are just completely turned off by him, and they kind of like look at each other, and they're like, what is this guy doing? We're expecting this type of Messiah, but here Jesus is saying that the Sabbath isn't a big deal, it's all about him. That the Sabbath isn't important. This whole thing we live for, that we, you know, don't do work, we don't do these certain things, and Jesus says, meh, just follow me, you know? That's what the Sabbath, I'm going to give you the new Sabbath. And so, all right, we've got some people awkward, uncomfortable by Jesus' teaching. And then he says that he's going to forgive sins. And it's like, whoa, 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 big guy. You know you teach great and people love you, but you can't do that. You know, only God can forgive sins, because I know, that's me. That, and he tells them just how, that he is God. And so Jesus, first of all, makes all of these Jewish authorities, the Pharisees, the scribes, just bonkers uncomfortable, that they are just don't know what's going on. But then if you look at the other people that Jesus encountered, there's like uncomfortable times, situations everywhere. I can only imagine being the people that own the house in the very beginning of Mark's gospel. They own this house. They invite Jesus over. All right, this is great. Jesus is here. Jesus starts healing people, and then they look around and their house is full, that everybody's just packing it inside their house. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. You know, they're getting their mud everywhere. They got sand they're dragging all in our houses. And then something falls on top of them. You know, you get some little dust, little dirt. And then the roof opens up, and those four friends are lowering their friend down through the roof of your house. If you just picture that for a little bit. You know, I had, you know, a house of all boys, and we wouldn't even dream of taking the roof off of the house. But we did some crazy things that made my parents extremely uncomfortable. I don't know, holes in walls, you know, spilt things, throwed things inside that you wouldn't even dare throw outside. But this is what happens when the Lord shows up. When the Lord comes, when Jesus comes amongst his people, just things go bonkers. I mean, all of these moments, do you think about Zacchaeus, who just kind of wanted to hide in the back. He'd been perfectly comfortable being short all of his life. And then he just like climbs a tree. Probably you see like on the movies, he pulled the branches back to see Jesus. And then Jesus looks at him and says, hey, I'm staying at your house tonight. Give me a nice room. I don't know. I don't know why Jesus has the accent of a New York City cab driver. But you think what that would have been like for Zacchaeus as he invites the Lord into his life, that the Lord comes in and just takes over. He's the guest who wasn't invited, the guest who shows up and probably would stay longer than you would ever imagine. But probably one of the most awkward moments for the Lord and the people around would have been the time that he waits a little bit to go to a funeral. They tell him that his friend Lazarus has died. And he says, well, I'll be there in a couple days. But then he goes and everybody's mourning at the tomb. And it's been, you know, he's been dead for a really long time, like 3 or 4 days. And then Jesus just tells people to roll back the stone. And you could only think, they're like, oh gosh, why? That is going to stink to high heaven. And they tell him that. They say, oh, sorry. They tell him that, Jesus, this is going to be awful. This is going to stink something fierce. He says, no, no, just do it. And you can imagine how uncomfortable this would be for everybody. And then when Jesus yells, Lazarus, come out. I don't know what the people would have been thinking as they're sitting there watching this, like, this guy's nuts. And then, you know, like 20 seconds later, you're just waiting there thinking, Jesus is crazy. And then you hear something rustling, and then you see Lazarus come out. That would have been the wildest moment, you know, next to Jesus' own resurrection. That you can imagine how uncomfortable that Jesus made everybody in everything he did, whether he was telling Peter to go fishing and you'll get your tax in the fish that you catch. Like, what the heck? What does he do? Who does that? Or he's multiplying loaves. Could you imagine, like, we have no food and then people just keep handing out and it just keeps coming. But that's what the Lord does in all of his actions. He just makes people very uncomfortable. And I was reading something the other day that made me extremely uncomfortable. I was reading the Gospel of Matthew for class, and the Lord tells, this is in the Sermon on the Mount. So in the Beatitudes, you know, Jesus tells everybody, you know, all those different things like, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the pure in heart. And then he goes throughout the Sermon on the Mount saying, you've heard it said this, I say that. But near the end, he says, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road broad that leads to destruction. And those who enter through it are many. How narrow the gate and constricted the road that leads to life. And those who find it are few. That made me terribly uncomfortable. And I don't, if we take those words seriously, it would probably make each and us comfortable, very uncomfortable. That he says that the road to destruction is wide, but the road to heaven is narrow and the ones who get in are few. Makes me think like, oh my gosh, I have to be so much better in every single way in my walk with the Lord. And it also makes me think, all right, this is just like tearing me apart inside. That the Lord is saying that, you know, it's not easy. That he's inviting us to something that's difficult and hard. It's like, why sometimes? But we have to be about the Lord's business. That these are our marching orders. It's like, you want to get to heaven? Go do it. You got to live in the love of the Lord in a radical way. And as one of the priests at the seminary always says, it's Christ or chaos. It's either Christ or our lives are going to be in chaos. That it's the Lord who puts together our lives, and it's him, it's only Jesus Christ that keeps us, makes us whole. And so we have to be comfortable that the Lord's going to ask us to be uncomfortable, for however strange that sounds. That the Lord's going to invite us to be uncomfortable in so many different ways in our lives. But as I'm preparing for ordination to the priesthood, there's another thing that makes me uncomfortable that, besides, you know, the question that the lady asked me, those just kind of, I just laugh now. But the one that's actually probably a little bit more real and a little bit more gut-wrenching is preparing to hear confessions. Now, you want to talk about the most uncomfortable thing in the Catholic life? I would think confession would be number one. I couldn't imagine any other thing being superior to confession in just kind of like, ugh, like, oh man, I gotta go tell somebody I did this. I mean, you walk into the confessional and you have to say, it's been this long, I probably should have gone sooner, and then just let it all rip. Like, all right, here's the junk in my life. And the whole time, you know, my family has a case of the strawberry faces, that we blush, you know, when we're embarrassed. And I can imagine when I go to confession, it's just like, you know, a strawberry patch right here. That you just so, you can't believe that things that you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to say this. Just the awkwardness of the whole moment, that you have to own up to it. That somehow when it's up in your head, it's like, yeah, I did that, and you know, I'm trying to do better. But when you have to say it to somebody else, that's when it's like, oh man, this is terrible. But I'm preparing to be on the other side of it now. And you want to talk about uncomfortable? Just the thought of it is unreal. That these are people's real lives. That these are people who are doing their best to get to heaven, to cooperate with the grace of the Lord. And here I'm supposed to be some 26-year-old schlep who's trying to just help people in any way and not say something that's going to drive them away from the sacrament forever, that's not going to, you know, make them run screaming. A priest recently told me that he was hearing confessions for people, second graders' first confessions, and you know, the girl just starts crying. She's like, it's okay. Oh, I peed all over the confessional. It's like, oh gosh. So you immediately have like every single horror story come up to you. That this is just extremely uncomfortable. The whole sacrament of confession is. But now, I was mocked when I brought this up at the seminary, that recently I've been thinking of confession in terms of a nursery rhyme. Yeah, I know. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. We all know that one. But you think about the fall, in our own falls in sin. That's what happens. You know, we fall, we break like the egg that Humpty Dumpty's always depicted in, and you're just like in pieces. You know, you go to confession and you just like throw all these pieces in the priest and in Jesus' face and say, you got to put me back together. That in our own sin begins to like tear us apart and it makes us uncomfortable. And you, when you recognize it, you say, oh my gosh, I can't do this on my own. You know, all the king's men, all the king's horses couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That this is something I can't do on my own. I must go encounter the Lord's forgiveness and allow Him to put me back, to restore me together in the sacrament of penance, in the sacrament of reconciliation. That it's going to be uncomfortable. And there's so many things in this life, but I think that one, the sacrament of reconciliation, is such a key to being a saint. It's such a key to holiness. To be absolutely honest in that, and to not be afraid, to overcome whatever kind of like anxieties that confessional brings, and to just lay it all on the line to Jesus Christ. Because when we do, you think about all the gospel stories when people are forgiven. Just that one where the person comes down through the roof, he tells him his sins are forgiven, he heals him, the guy gets up and walks away. That's us in the confessional, that when we encounter the Lord's grace, we're going to get up and walk away, and the Lord's going to restore His love in our lives. But it's not easy. It's not easy to encounter these uncomfortable things. So we need a virtue. We need something, a habit, an interior disposition to do something good, to encounter all like the fear, the anxiety, everything that goes on, you know, whether it's in the workplace and you got to make a tough decision, whether it's you're a parent and you have to tell your kids no or yes or encourage them to do better. We need a virtue. We need a firm purpose to do this. And I think the one that we're looking for in this encountering our own being uncomfortable is courage. How are we doing? Boom. See? You got to help people be uncomfortable sometimes. Sorry if I scarred your daughter, Jason and Donna. But, so we need the virtue of courage. And so I went and, you know, the virtue of courage is just so important. And the Catechism in paragraph 1808 says that courage ensures firmness in difficulties and constancy in the pursuit of good. That courage is that never quit attitude of following Jesus Christ. That when time is difficult in the face of fear, uncomfortableness, anxieties, awkwardness, that courage is the virtue, the gift of the Lord that allows us to be strong, to conquer our fears through the gift of the Holy Spirit and the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. That it can conquer everything through courage. We realize that Jesus tells His disciples in the Last Supper that I have told you this so that you might have peace in me. In the world you will have trouble, but take courage. I have conquered the world. That we know, if we believe this, if we believe that Jesus Christ has really conquered everything, nothing else will matter. we'll have the courage that we need to whatever we need to do, whether it's small things in life, talking to somebody, helping somebody, do something courageous, something virtuous, whether it's something big, like becoming a priest, whatever the Lord's inviting us to do. We need that virtue of courage. The courage conquers fear. Courage conquers our uncomfortableness. Especially, you see this in the lives of the saints. And one of my favorite, probably one of the greatest saints of the last century, of the 20th century, was St. Maximilian Kolbe. And most people know his story, that he was a famous prisoner in the concentration camp of Auschwitz. So he was there, he's a Catholic priest, a Franciscan priest, and Maximilian Kolbe gets taken to Auschwitz, and he's there, and one morning in 1941, I think it's late July of 1941, they wake up, they're put in their lines, and the SS guards tell them, three prisoners escaped last night. And you guys are going to be the example, so nobody else tries to escape. So there's a line of who knows how many of them, and they say, 10 of you are going to the starvation bunker. 10 of you are going to pay for their escape. So they go, and they pick them out. You. They go to this man named Franciszek Gajenkowski. I don't know if it's Polish, but they go to this guy, and he's selected as one of the prisoners to go to the starvation bunker. And like any husband and father, he cries out and says, but I have a family, I have a wife, I have kids, you can't do this to me. And they hear a voice from the other end of the line, and it's Father Maximilian Kolbe who says, I'll take his place. I'll take his place in the starvation bunker. And this, of course, in the concentration camps where everybody is just afraid for their life, is something absolutely unheard of. And they turn to him and they say, who are you? He says, I'm a Catholic priest. And that's all he said. So he stepped up and volunteered to go to the starvation bunker. And they checked in every single day for 2 weeks. And Maximilian Kolbe is leading the people in prayers. He watches the people around him pass away, die of starvation. And he's the last one. He's there praying every day, leading them in the rosary. And eventually they say, well, we can't do this anymore. So they inject him with something that ends his life. So he dies on August 14th, 1941. And then they cremated his body. So he gives us a great example of what it means to be courageous, what it means to go and give your life for Jesus Christ. And just to have no fear, to have absolutely no fear, that courage can conquer even death. Quick side note about Maximilian Kolbe. Since his body was cremated, there are no relics, you know. Catholics like to keep relics, bones of saints. They didn't have his bones or any of his body. But he had a community of Franciscans that he started in Poland. And Maximilian Kolbe went to Japan, and he comes back to Poland. And, you know, Franciscans, one thing they're known for, big old beards. And so as he realizes he's going to be sent to Auschwitz. And he says, well, I don't want these Nazis doing anything to my beard because, you know, that could be something they would torture me with. So he tells two of the brothers, Franciscan brothers, cut it. So they cut his beard, and then they sneak it into their habits because they want to save it because they know this guy is a living saint. Well, he sees him, and he tells him to throw it in the fire. So they kind of throw it on the side of the fire, and after he leaves, they save as much of it as they can that hasn't burnt. So if you ever see a first-class relic of St. Maximilian Kolbe, it's a beard hair. That's all that they have left. I have seen one. There's one up in Chicago at Marytown. So that's a little side note about St. Maximilian Kolbe. But he gives us that great example of courage, that great example of having no fear in following Jesus Christ. He just gave absolutely everything. But the thing, and I think it's a popular story. A lot of people know the story of St. Maximilian Kolbe. But what they don't know is that this just like didn't happen out of nowhere. That St. Maximilian Kolbe, his whole life was preparing for this moment where he was going to give his life for this father and husband. So he regularly helped hide the Jews in Poland. He started a state-of-the-art printing press to spread the good news. That he started this huge Franciscans, basically a whole town called Marytown in Polish, that they were going to just, they had all sorts of printed materials, state-of-the-art, that they were going to go out and tell the story of Jesus Christ to the world. Like I said, he went to Japan, founded a community of Franciscans. But in all this, like, state-of-the-art equipment, the one thing I always found fascinating is how much poverty he actually himself lived in. So they sat in unplaned chairs. So if you know what that means, you take these boards and you put them together, and then you sit on them in chairs. And then you put it through a machine that's going to smooth it out. They didn't put it in the machine that's going to smooth it out. They just sat on, like, the rough chairs that he was willing, day in and day out, to live this virtue of courage. Bit parched. But he did this every day. And that's, I think, the message for us. That every day, whether we're parents, whether we work in a job, whether we're husbands, wives, preparing to be priests, whether we're net ministry teams, whether we're working with the poor, that we have to day in and day out have courage. And I met a lady who had a great motto. She's a Franciscan sister in Chicago. Her name is Sister Alicia, and she's famous. You might ask, why is she famous? She won the game, or won the contest on the TV of Chopped. So Sister Alicia won a Chopped episode, so she's there in a Franciscan habit, cooking everything, whatever. Pretty cool. Probably the most famous person I've ever met. But she had a say, the time I met her, she had something that she wanted to tell me, and she told our whole group who was there, that she has a way, something that she does every day, and she calls it one bold move. To do one bold move every day that's going to make you uncomfortable. Do one thing every day that's going to test your virtue of courage, that's going to be you taking the next level of trusting in the love of the Lord and going the extra mile. That Lent's coming up, and maybe this is a Lenten practice, to do just one bold move, one courageous move every single day. I'd just like to leave us with one image. And it's the one that throughout my life has always been a test. And it's Jesus when he's not in the boat with the disciples. So they're all in the boat, and the storm comes. And then Jesus walks on the water up to him, and he has a little conversation with Peter. And he says, Peter, come out. Come out. And Peter says, bid me, Lord. He invites him. He says, come on, Lord, bring me out. And he says, okay. Can you imagine what that would have been for Peter? To take that one step, to have just that one step, is all he had to do. He'd taken millions of steps in his life. He'd traveled all over the world with Jesus, or all over the Middle East, or whatever, Holy Land. And the Lord invited him just to take one step on top of water. What that would have been like, that he knew, as long as he looked at the Lord, as long as he kept his eyes fixed on Jesus Christ, it didn't matter. He could have flown. And he does. He starts to walk. That we can do this. That when we keep our gaze focused on the love of the Lord, as we're about ready to in adoration, that it doesn't matter. That we can sell everything we have to follow Jesus Christ. That the Lord beckons us to him to be uncomfortable. That he calls us forward to love him, to know him, and to be his missionaries out in the world. It's going to make us uncomfortable, but it's worth doing. It's worth selling that entire field to get the one pearl of great price.